ITS Coffee Break for Friday, February 6th, 2009.
On this week's edition of the ITS Coffee Break, we have many, many updates for the spring semester. We'll be talking about some Moodle usability testing, an upgrade to Soapbox, a WordPress MU pilot, and Spaces. And in help news, we'll be talking Zembra, Zembra, Zembra.
Hello, folks. My name is Ken Newquist.
And I'm Courtney Bentley.
And we are back with a coffee break.
We are. We've had many coffee breaks, but not actually, you know, recorded one in a while.
Yeah, because it's been a really busy end of semester and a really busy January break.
That's right. Yeah, you know, we sort of chuckle because students and faculty come back after Jan term, and they're all like, oh, how was your break? And we just sort of chuckle because it's not really a break.
If by break you mean work your butt off for 6 weeks.
Yeah, it's just an absolute sort of like change of pace. Like, I think I've had more sort of like free time to negotiate on my own the last 2 weeks since the semester started than I did the whole of break.
Yeah, so it's been much more relaxed since the start of term, which of course, again, is the inverse for everybody else, right?
Yeah. So let's tell you about the things we did over January.
I guess it's not actually on our show notes, but we should mention the fact that we went to Reed College for Moodle Hack Doc Fest. This was the third one we've had, and we spent basically 3 days in Portland working on Moodle, fixing bugs, setting up some usability testing scripts, which we're going to get into in a little bit, and basically just trying to improve the software. So that's our big drive this spring semester, is going to be improving Moodle and working with other schools to improve Moodle. So I guess that leads us right into our next thing, right?
Right.
Unless you want to talk about Portland a little.
Well, Portland
Voodoo
was...
Voodoo Donuts.
Voodoo Donuts, that was pretty spectacular. So, you know, it rained a lot during the day while we were in Portland, which was nice because it sort of, you know, made us feel better about sitting in a locked room working on Moodle. But then, you know, we did venture out. So colleagues from Smith and Kenyon and some other places joined me on a pilgrimage to this place called Voodoo Donuts, which is open 24 hours a day. And it's right in the city, and it's pretty spectacular. I mean, they have donuts that basically have a layer of icing and then Captain Crunch with crunch berries pressed into the icing. I mean, if this gives you any indication
it's
of
crazy.
The place, it's pretty.
Donuts with, like, mini M&Ms on top. It's just...
Like crazy flavors, like I forget what it was called, but it was basically grape flavored. So it had grape flavored icing that was purple, and then it tasted like grape bubblegum almost. It was pretty intense.
Yeah, but we did actually get a lot of work done too. And one of the things that we did was basically start to set up our Moodle usability tests. So basically, here's the idea, folks. What we want to do is we want to put people in front of a computer and ask them to complete certain tasks within Moodle. And the idea is to see how well they do. And it's not so much about testing them as it is about testing the application, seeing what the problem areas are. You know, where do people get stuck? Where do people get confused? Where do people get really frustrated and yell at the computer?
Right.
So we're going to try and record all that stuff. So we will have a screen capture program that will capture their motion, and we'll be audio recording to kind of get them to verbalize and say, okay, well, I'm frustrated right now, and this is what I'm trying to do, and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, it was pretty interesting, actually. During the Hack Doc Fest, we brought in two faculty members from Reed, who one who had used Moodle before and one who had never used it at all. And it was pretty intriguing. I mean, we were pretty spot on with most of the tasks that we thought would be challenging for our non-user. So I'll be excited to bring this project to Lafayette and actually get some of our faculty involved with it.
Yeah, I think it'll be cool. I mean, one of the challenges we're going to have with this is kind of like hitting a moving target, because one of the problem areas is the gradebook. And one of the things that the Moodle community is actively working on right now is the grade book. But I think there's other things that about how assignments interact with the grade book that are kind of that can be problematic regardless. I mean, there's some things that I don't think they're going to easily be able to. There are some things in fixing the grade book that they will not fix elsewhere. Does that make sense? So in any case, we are going to be, our first guinea pigs for this will be members of ITS. But once we nail down our script, we're going to be recruiting students and faculty to help us with testing Moodle. And I think the really cool thing about this is that we're also going to be doing these self-same tests at other colleges. So we have colleagues at Smith, at Kalamazoo, Reed College. They're all going to be doing these tests as well. Then we're going to take the results from those tests and then meet again for HackDoc Fest 4 at Smith College in June and basically try and fix stuff. So I think it's great. I mean, one of the things that we know that the Moodle community has requested is usability testing. They want actual faculty to use the software and give them feedback on it. So, well, we're going to do that.
So another project that happened pretty much at the beginning of the semester, but we'll call it over January term, was upgrading Soapbox.
Yeah.
So Soapbox, most of you, especially listeners, know that Soapbox has been our blogging platform here at the college for a couple years now, and it needed some serious upgrading. So Ken and Jason spent some time testing and getting things upgraded, and it's got sort of a facelift. So if you haven't been there in a while, it actually moved addresses as well.
Yeah, so the new Soapbox is at soapbox.lafayette.edu. And I guess, you know, that we have a spiffy new theme, so I think it looks a lot better than the old Soapbox did. A lot of the changes are kind of under the hood. So we upgraded Acid Free, which is the image gallery we use to maintain images within Soapbox. We upgraded the underlying software as well. Now, that did break some stuff, as we discovered. The other thing that we found interesting was that there were capabilities that Soapbox had that we weren't really aware that Soapbox had that people were using, just because they were using the full capabilities of the system, and we do minimal things when we're posting, like coffee breaks and stuff. So it was cool to see that people were really delving into the system, but it was also kind of surprising when they would come to us and say, oh, well, this doesn't work anymore. So, really? You can do that? So I guess it's nice to be surprised by your own creations, right?
That's right.
There were pleasant surprises. Maybe not so pleasant for them when they broke, but it was cool. But everything should be working pretty much the way it used to work at this point. And it's new and improved and running on the latest and greatest versions of Drupal, so that's cool. Now, we are looking at a successor to Soapbox, though. I should say we don't know the Soapbox is necessarily going to go away. It may still have a role going forward, but we are looking at a new blogging platform.
That's right. So many of you may have heard of a little software application called WordPress. It's not very little. I'm being totally sarcastic, but
it's actually kind of huge. It's probably the biggest. Well, I probably one of the biggest blogging platforms on the planet.
Right. So it's open source along with, you know, other things that we love, obviously. But we are piloting WordPress's multi-user
version
of their software. So this has sort of been a quick turnaround pilot. I guess we knew we wanted to do it, but as with most things, you know, we turn them around pretty quick. But we currently have a few classes who are using WordPress MU to blog for class. Ken and Jason and John O'Keefe and I are all sort of toying with personal blogs, and we have a couple of other people who will probably be joining us. I would say that O'Keefe's is probably the most extensive currently.
Yes, that would be the Johnny Transit blog.
That is the Johnny Transit blog. So for those of you who don't know, John's pretty obsessed with directions and transit and things like this. So he's using his knowledge for, I don't know if it's really for good or for evil, but he's using his knowledge to create a blog, which is pretty entertaining.
Yeah, I haven't actually figured out what I want to do with my blog yet, but I have too many blogs.
Yeah, I do too.
I was thinking maybe photos or something, you know, snag the camera, take some random pictures.
Yeah.
Who knows? But in any case, one of the things that we want to talk about, I guess, with WordPress and what we're trying to do with the pilot is use WordPress basically as a lightweight content management system. So there's two ways you can basically use it, right? Is to blog, where you're just basically doing kind of a reverse chronological order journaling, where you put up a new post, you talk about what you're doing, blah, 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 right? Which is very cool. You know, there's definitely a role for blogging. But the other thing that WordPress could be very cool for is basically doing content management, right? So we have a lot of people who have to maintain a lot of sites. And it can be a real pain to do it in Dreamweaver. There's a steep learning curve there. It's also problematic when you only do it once a semester. Maybe once a year.
Right. So I end up with people making appointments about once a year, once every, 12 to 18 months. And they come in, they don't remember their password because it's completely different from their network credentials. And it's challenging. And also, we have student organizations and things who, students graduate and different students are maintaining it different semesters. And it's difficult to sort of know how to pass those credentials around so that everyone has the right access.
Right.
And so, that's one of the, I think, one of the big benefits to this is, number one, use your network ID and password to log in. And number two, all these blogs can have multiple users added to them within different roles. So you might have people administering it. You might have people just editors. You may have people just adding content and then someone else sort of putting it in live.
Yeah, I mean, right now we have like this convoluted process for getting your club ID, right? So if you wanted to reset your club password, well, I'm going to need the okay from your advisor. You need to come down. I need to see your Lafayette ID before I can reset the password for you. With this, we could just make the advisor could be an administrator on the blog and then just give access to the student and boom. You know, it's much, much faster. And even if we're going to add somebody to a blog, we can do it almost instantly through the interface. So I'm really excited about it. I think it's pretty cool.
Yeah. So if you're interested in taking a look at what's going on there and keeping up with that pilot project, we do have some things up already at wordpress.lafayette.edu. And, we welcome your comments and there's some more information about the pilot there. And
I should add one note about comments, right? Because people outside of Lafayette will be able to comment on our blog. So when we get to the new coffee break blog that we'll be doing on WordPress, you'll be able to go to wordpress.lafayette.edu and go to /coffee break. No tilde, guys.
Yay.
Just coffee break. And you'll be able to comment on our blog. Now, not everybody has to do that. You can actually make the blogs private if you wanted to. You can prevent outside people from posting at all. But, with something like the coffee break where it's both kind of internal and external audiences, it's going to be cool. So, sorry, we're geeking out. I guess Spaces is the next thing we want to talk about because it's in production now.
It is in production, so I'm not sure if we've mentioned this. I think we mentioned it, but it wasn't ready yet. Ken did it. Ken did it. He set up an installation of Moodle, which is separate from our academic installation. And this one is shibboleized, if we can bastardize that word and make it into a verb. Basically, it's implementing Shibboleth for authentication. And I think we've mentioned this before, but just as a refresher, Shibboleth is basically a federated ID. So what that means is that there are groups of institutions who are using this authentication process. They are allowing other schools and organizations and things to actually let their users authenticate based on their home credentials. So right now we've got several schools who are added to our list in Spaces, and those people are able to just use their regular institution credentials to get into an installation of Moodle that sits on our server.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. And if they don't have IDs at their institution, they can create one, what's called a Protect ID, and then it's actually through a third-party vendor, basically, who provides Shibboleth IDs, and then they can use that to log into their courses. Now, the thing is that, sure, anybody could then log into Spaces, which is one of the reasons why Spaces is actually separate from our Moodle installation, yes? But the other thing is that then you have to assign them within a course. So just because someone can get into Spaces doesn't mean they can necessarily get into all the courses that are in there. But I think this provides an awesome answer to the inevitable question, or the question we get a lot, which is, I have colleagues at such and such college that I want to work with. How do I do it? Well, now Spaces is your answer. So we've been able to give that answer a couple times, right?
We have, and it's been very exciting to sort of know that we were anticipating this, and now we have a solution.
Yeah.
So, as always, if you're interested in using any of these tools that we've been talking about, feel free to email us at ITS_blog?
No, just ITS blog.
ITS blog at lafayette.edu.
So I guess the one last thing we should mention is that we're going to go to Knightley Summit.
That's right.
Which is in Philadelphia this year. And the Knightley Summit is basically a gathering of higher ed tech folks.
Yeah, specifically liberal arts part of Knightley.
So if you're going to be there, you know, be sure to look us up. Because we know we have listeners who will be there. So please track us down. So in tech news this week, we kind of had to dig for some tech news because I just wasn't feeling it.
Yeah, I don't, you know, I mean, really, when the biggest tech news is that Barack Obama gets to keep a BlackBerry, like, okay.
Yeah, I will give out props to them for the WhiteHouse.gov blog.
Yes, actually.
And the transition to the WhiteHouse.gov, I think it's a much better WhiteHouse.gov site.
You know, I actually have been really impressed because I have seen multiple people with computer browsers open to WhiteHouse.gov recently, and I don't think that's ever happened, ever.
So. I mean, I think some of the blog posts have been kind of press releasey.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, they still have a ways to go. Right. But still, I thought it was a nice transition from what was there before.
Yeah, so. I mean, I'm absolutely in love with the idea that there is now a director of new media for the White House.
And that there's an RSS feed for the White House website, right? So,
right.
I mean, actually, I don't know if there was one before, because I never really went to the WhiteHouse.gov site before, because there was nothing really there, right? So,
yeah.
That was pretty cool. Now, going to an entirely different planet for a little while. I've had 6 weeks or whatever to work on my transitions, right? Google has added Mars to Google Earth.
That's right. So now, when you go to the little drop-down, you get Earth, Sky, and Mars.
Right, so this isn't like the Google Earth, this wasn't the Google Mars like
the overlay
map version,
thing.
Right, the overlay thing, right? This is 3D imaging of Mars. So you can go in, you can load up Mars, you can go to the various landmarks on Mars. It gives you, there's a like a tour of Mars, so you can click on the little icons and go on the tour of Mars. You can zoom in on different landing spots, and one of the really cool things is, and I've seen these photos before, but it's cool that it's actually incorporated into Google Mars. You can zoom in on the Mars Phoenix lander, which was the polar lander that landed, I think, over the summer. You can zoom in to the extent that you can see the parachute and heat shield from the spacecraft.
That's pretty cool.
From the orbital photos.
Like, I really am kind of jealous of elementary school kids now, because they've got so much cool stuff to be able to look at for dumb class projects.
Yeah, it's just really, really nifty. So I thought it was pretty cool. National Geographic has an article about it, which I linked to in the show notes. I couldn't find an actual Google article on it, but this should be sufficient. It kind of tells you what you can do with it and stuff. The other thing that was neat for Google Earth, which I haven't tried yet, is apparently the oceans are now part of Google Earth. So you can actually dive into the oceans.
Yeah.
And there's a list of shipwrecks.
Oh.
So you can't actually, I wasn't able to, like, I was kind of hoping that you could drill down into the shipwreck,
yeah,
right, and actually see photos from the shipwreck within Google Earth. It links external to the shipwreck notes,
yeah.
So like external websites. But still, I mean, it's pretty cool that you can see like shipwrecks in Google Earth. I don't really go into Google Earth that often, but I thought it was kind of cool. Our other bit of tech news, and this is one of the reasons why we've been talking about doing WordPress in the spring for a long time. We were talking about it kind of through the fall semester, right? So this was not a surprise to us that we were going to do the pilot. But the reason why we were scrambling is because WordPress 2.7 is new. It came out, I think, in October or November, and they've been talking about how the MU version of it was going to be coming out sometime soon. Well, the beta came out, what, 3 days before we were going to get ready with the
pilot? I believe so.
So we tested WordPress MU. We got actively into WordPress testing like the second week of January, and then the beta came out about maybe at most a week before we were ready to go live with it. And the jump between WordPress 2.6 and 2.7 is just huge. There's a whole new administrative interface, and it is just light years better, I think.
Yeah, definitely.
So we're sitting there going, well, you know, do we use the beta for the production site? You know, well, it is a pilot. You know, we're going to live kind of on the edge anyway. But then the actual 2.7 was released.
After we'd made the decision that we were indeed going to live on the edge, so. That was kind of nice.
Yeah, it was. Because we really didn't want to get stuck with the 2.6 interface for all of the spring semester, especially since we're trying to determine whether or not this is a legitimate replacement for Soapbox and for basically Dreamweaver for sites, right? So I'm really glad that we were able to get ahead with the new 2.7 interface. And you can check it out if you want to go and download it and install it on your computer. Is mu.wordpress.org is the location of their website.
So the last bit of tech news is just sort of, you know, I don't know if anybody else has gotten really annoyed, but I'm really tired of hearing about this whole, like, DTV transition coming in February, and I was, like, so excited that it was finally February because we could stop hearing about it, and then they pushed the date back to my birthday. So I get to hear about it for the rest of...
But in a bid to increase the confusion, it's optional.
Which is crazy.
So and some TV stations can actually switch over now, but not everybody has to. The actual cutoff is now going to be in June.
Right. That's just insane.
What?
So what? one other rant, just while I'm at it, is that they made this change several days ago, and the FCC still hasn't updated their website. So it still says February 17th or whatever it is. So.
Yes,
yeah, that kind of entertains me that the FCC can't get their, you know, information, their communication sort of right.
The FCC making a confusing migration even more confusing because there's still a lot of people who
don't know what it means.
Yeah, I think I saw a blog post that was something along the lines of there are currently 6.5 million people who don't know what the transition is, and you know, in June there's still going to be 6 million people who don't know what the transition is, and.
That's insane.
They're going to go back. And I think that the digital TV transformation is going to rank up there with New Coke in terms of poorly migrated, you know, poorly planned migrations.
Yeah, you might be onto something with that.
I'm just saying.
It's at least something to watch for the entertainment value.
Communication disasters in progress. So
in tech news,
how about that Zimbra migration, eh?
Yeah.
Talking about migrations.
That, you know, I'm not sure what the general population of the campus thinks, but that was pretty incredible.
I think it was actually spectacular. But, I mean, then again, we saw what was going into the back end.
Right.
I mean, we moved, or I should say, John Fulton and Rich Santillo, who were probably the guys who spent the most amount of time having to deal with the Zimbra migration, moved a mountain of data. When it takes you a month to move mess of data from one bucket to another, you got a lot of data.
Yeah, so for those of you who just need a little cliff notes on this, basically we've been using, or we were previously using, a product called Communigate for our email. And we migrated to Zimbra. And so what that required was for John Fulton to write a script that would essentially scrape all of the email and contacts and calendar information from Communigate and port it over into Zimbra. And like Ken said, it took a month to move all of the user data over.
Yeah.
So...
we're talking gigs and gigs and gigs and gigs and gigs of data. I don't know what the final number was, but... it was huge.
Right.
So
for those of you who've, you know, noticed, webmail, completely different.
For one thing, it's understandable and usable.
That's right. And you can right-click, and you can, like, drag things, and...
you don't have to spend 5 minutes trying to figure out how to open a new email.
It's pretty lovely.
It's astounding.
So for those of you who are Outlook users, you may or may not have really seen a change. As far as your email and everything, all that should be the same and how Outlook works. So.
There were a couple hiccups here and there.
Yeah, a couple hiccups, but that's sort of to be expected when, you know.
When you move a mountain.
That's right. I mean, think about moving houses or offices or something. Like, inevitably, one or two things gets lost in the shuffle or, you know, some lamp gets broken. But, you know, super glue and...
yeah.
It all gets stuck back together. Right. So for those of you who are looking to learn how to manage your inbox better using Zimbra, we have set up a whole series of Zimbra workshops. We just finished up the first week of those, and they'll continue on for next week. But basically, there are three sort of versions. There's the webmail version, which Chris Koch is teaching. There is a version for people using Outlook, Calendar, and Contacts that Laura Young is teaching. And then there's one on synchronizing all of your data using your Mac, which Jason Alley is teaching.
Which is just crazy, because if you were on a Mac before, you didn't do any of this.
That's right.
Well, you might have IMAPped. You might have downloaded your mail and synced it with the mail server. But calendaring?
No
way.
Like,
actually getting invited to events and like inviting people. Let me back up. You can now create an event in iCal, invite people to that event, and it all just automatically populates to their computers.
Yeah, it's pretty great.
Yeah.
And actually, you can also have Zimbra working with your smartphone. So for me...
Those of you who have very cool smartphones.
That's right.
So, of which I do not.
And he's not bitter.
I'm not. I don't want an iPhone.
So it's pretty great because basically what happens is that the information in webmail is the same for me as all of my information on my Mac here at work, which also then gets pushed into my iPhone. So if I'm out meeting with someone and I want to set up an appointment, all I need to do is open my iPhone, go into the calendar, add the appointment, and it's going to show up on my desktop as well as in my webmail.
That is pretty cool. And the other thing is that, well, for one thing, it's not just iPhones. You can do it with any smartphone can basically do this, yes?
Yes. The only problem
is some caveats, right?
BlackBerry.
Yeah.
BlackBerry is still a little touchy, so they are working out a solution. There are some changes here on campus regarding smartphones and support and all that, so there will be some documentation, some policies, some things added to the website in the very, very near future. So keep a lookout for that. And
the other thing, because the iPhone can do it, the iPod Touch can also do it.
Right.
So if you have a Touch, say you're one of the students who bought a new Mac this year and got a free iPod Touch with it, you can actually do all the cool things that Courtney described with your iPod Touch, which is kind of handy.
It's very cool.
Yeah.
And I can also have people, you know, subscribe to my calendar, so I can actually send my calendar URL to my family, and they can actually tell, like, what I'm doing.
Yeah. And honestly, it's even more handy now because we had to change to wireless on campus. So handheld devices now, like an iPod Touch, you used to have to constantly authenticate to wireless, which was a pain because it's a microscopic screen, right? But now you can just authenticate once, and you're good for the semester, I think.
That's right. Yeah, so maybe we should mention this just while we're talking about help. One last thing is that because of the change to wireless on campus, there's no longer guest wireless access. As far as you can't go into the wireless networks and select guest and just jump on. So what you do now is you go into LC, and if you are a guest or if you have guests on campus, you need to go into password.lafayette.edu and request a guest login for them. And it's like a temporary login. The thing you need to keep in mind is that anything that guest does on the network, you're responsible for.
Yeah, so if they decide to spam the universe... it's your fault.
You're the one coming down.
So. Now, also, just keep in mind, this only gets you onto Wi-Fi. It doesn't let them email. It doesn't let them into Moodle. None of that stuff. The only thing it's good for is getting on wireless. So I guess that will about do it for now. We would appreciate some feedback. Wow, look how long we went. We went like 28 minutes.
Wow, thanks for sticking with us.
Woohoo! Anyway, we're always looking for feedback. You can send it to us at ITS. We need to do more of these because I can't remember the email address. itsblog@lafayette.edu. You can go to our spiffy new blog for Coffee Break at wordpress.lafayette.edu/coffeebreak and leave us a comment there. And hopefully we'll be talking to you before summer break.